Hello, and welcome to Pardes from Jerusalem, the podcast series from the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies in Jerusalem. I'm Larry Kluger, a Pardes alum. This week, Rabbi Schweiger discusses Parshat Shmini. Rabbi Meir Schweiger is a senior faculty member of Pardes and serves as a Mashkiach Ruchani, the spiritual guide for Pardes. And now, Rabbi Meir Schweiger.
This week's Parsha is Parshat Shmini. In today's podcast, I would like to examine chapter 10, the story of the death of Aaron's two sons, Nadav and Avihu. But in order to understand this story, we need to contextualize it. So we will begin by looking at the opening verses of our parsha, chapter 9, verse 1. And it was on the eighth day that Moshe called to Aaron and his sons and to the elders of Israel. And he said to Aaron, take a calf for a sin offering, a ram for a burnt offering, and bring them before God. And to the Jewish people say, take a goat for a sin offering, a calf, a sheep, complete whole ones for a burnt offering, an ox and a ram for a peace offering to offer to slaughter before God, and a meal offering mixed with oil, because today God will appear to you. On the phrase, because today God will appear to you, Rashi comments, God will appear to you to cause his presence to dwell in the work of your hands. Therefore, the sacrifices that are coming on this day are obligatory. What is this eighth day that our parsha discusses? On the opening verse, Rashi comments, this is the eighth day of the Miluim, of the training. It is the first of the month of Nisan, the day on which the tabernacle was established. Rashi sees our parsha as directly following the end of last week's parsha. The end of Parshat Shmini, of Parshat Tzav, chapter 8, verse 33, speaks of Aaron and his sons camping out at the entrance to the tent of meeting, to not leave it for a period of 7 days, because these are the 7 days of their training, to prepare them for their jobs as Kohanim. And Rashi, based on a Midrash, says that these 7 days are the last days of the month of Adar, which would then mean that last week's parsha and the opening of our parsha are out of chronological sequence. The place where they should appear is at the end of the book of Shmot. In chapter 40 in the book of Shmot, we are told of the establishment of the Mishkan on the first of Nisan, which means the end of last week's parsha should have been either before chapter 40 in Shmot or the beginning of chapter 40. And the beginning of our parsha should have been between verse 33 and verse 34 in chapter 40. After chapter 40 describes how Moshe established the Mishkan, the next step is to discuss the sacrifices that were brought on that day. And in fact, chapter 9 in the book of Vayikra, our parsha, culminates in verses 23 and 24, where at the end of verse 23 we're told, Vayerach Chavod Hashem El Kol Ha'am, that the glory of God appears to all the people. And in verse 24, Vateitze Esh Milifnei Hashem, and fire goes out from before God and consumes the sacrifices. So that the logical place would be the chronological sequence. Chapter 40 of Shmot, verses 1 through 33. The tabernacle is established. The beginning of our parsha, the sacrifices are brought. verses 23 and 24 in our parsha, chapter 9. The presence, the glory of God is revealed by fire which comes forth and consumes the sacrifices. And then verse 34 in chapter 40, the cloud covers the tabernacle, and the glory of God fills the tabernacle. Initially, the glory of God appears through fire which comes down. Subsequently, there is a cloud which fills the tabernacle with the glory of God. Why the change in chronology? I'll just point out it's very interesting that there's a certain anomaly here in our parsha. The Ibn Ezra, who normally jumps to see various things out of chronological sequence, in our section actually says that the pshat is that this is the eighth day, not the first of Nisan, but the eighth of Nisan, which would then mean that all of these parshiot have been following their proper chronological sequence. He goes on to quote the Midrash, and perhaps seems to accept it as authoritative. Yet nevertheless, the Ibn Ezra would have very easily explained this as being the eighth day. But let's get back to Rashi. If in fact things are out of chronological sequence, why? And the answer seems to be very straightforward. The end of Shemot is focused on the project of the construction of the Mishkan. And therefore we have four parshiot, where we have the instructions, and then ultimately the execution. And that is why in the end of Shemot, all that matters to us is the building, the utensils. The book of Vayikra focuses on the avodah, the service which is done in the Mishkan. And hence, after the first two parshiot describe the order of service of the various sacrifices, our parsha focuses on the installation, the beginning of the actual service that happened on the first of Nisan. Vayikra is not interested in the building, in the structure. It's interested in the content, in the service. When we look at chapter 9, it is clear that the goal of the service is to cause the presence of God to dwell in the Mishkan. In many ways, the service highlights the marriage, the love relationship between God and the Jewish people. The Jewish people express their love of God by offering sacrifices, and God reciprocates by causing his presence to dwell among the people. And perhaps we can see that mood, that feeling, in our parsha, chapter 9, verse 24, the very last verse. It speaks of the fire which comes forth before the presence of God, which consumes the sacrifices. And at the end of the verse, it says, and the people see, and they start singing. They fall on their faces. The singing, Vayaronu, is an expression of their joy. Their joy that God has accepted their sacrifices. Falling on their face is an expression of their submission to God, humbly present. Let me backtrack a moment. In verse 23, it says, and Moshe and Aaron came into the tent of meeting, and they went out, and they blessed the people. And Rashi seems to be very upset, and he even articulates it. Why are Moshe and Aaron entering the tabernacle at that point? And one could add, why do they then go out and bless the people? In the previous verse, verse 22, Aaron lifted up his hands and blessed the people. Why should there be another blessing? And Rashi gives two explanations as to why they enter the tabernacle. The first explanation is that Moshe is going in to teach Aaron how to do the service of the incense. I'll come back to this a little bit later, but I'm more interested in the second explanation. And Rashi says, when Aaron saw that all the sacrifices had been brought and all the actions that needed to be done were finished, nevertheless, God's presence did not descend among the Jewish people. And Aaron became very distressed. And he said, I know that God is angry at me. Because of me, the presence has not come down in the midst of the people. And he turned to Moshe and said to him, Moshe, my brother, this is what you do to me? And we could add parenthetically, you set me up. You had me go inside, do all the service, so that I should become embarrassed? We can fully understand the profound sense of shame that Aaron has. On the day, which is perhaps the crowning glory for the Jewish people, the crystallization of their love/marriage relationship with God, when Aaron does everything to the best of his ability to execute the marriage, to make it become a reality, and instead it becomes a total flop. It highlights the alienation of the people from God reflected in their representative. And Rashi goes on to say, immediately Moshe entered the tabernacle together with Aaron, and they requested mercy. And God's presence came down. And when it says they exited and blessed the people, what did they say? May it be pleasant before you, God. May it be your will that your divine presence dwell in the work of the hands of the Jewish people. And at that moment, the divine presence came down. At that moment, it became clear that God had forgiven Aaron and the Jewish people for the sin of the golden calf. As I mentioned, this was a crowning point for both Aaron and the Jewish people. And then all of a sudden, there's a major shift. Chapter 10, verse 1. And the sons of Aaron took Nadav and Avihu, each man his censer, and they put in it fire, and they put upon it incense, and they offered before God a strange fire, which God had not commanded them. And fire came out from before God and consumed them, and they died before God. And Moshe said to Aaron, this is what God said, through those who are near to me, I will be sanctified, and upon the face of the nation, I will become honored. And Aaron was silent. Note the very interesting parallel between chapter 10, verse 2, and chapter 9, verse 24. In both cases, fire comes out before God. In both cases, the fire consumes. In one case, it consumes the sacrifices. In the other case, it consumes Aaron's two sons. One cannot help but make the association and perhaps draw the conclusion that on a certain level, Aaron's sons were sacrifices. And in fact, there are certain midrashim which reflect this by saying that Aaron is punished for his role in the golden calf through the death of two of his sons. In a certain way, Nadav and Avihu become the expiation, the atonement for Aaron. I would like to examine this on a deeper level, because it seems to be, at face value, that there is a major difference between the fire which comes out consuming the sacrifices and the fire which comes out consuming the sons of Aaron. And let me explain. I mentioned at the beginning, the fire which consumes the sacrifices is the manifestation of the glory of God, of the divine presence which is now beginning to dwell among the Jewish people on an ongoing basis in the tabernacle, is an expression of the love between God and the Jewish people. The fire which consumes Aaron's two sons is an expression of God's wrath. And in fact, we find a parallel story or a parallel example in chapter 11 in the book of Numbers, where it says that as the people begin their journey through the desert to enter the land of Israel, there are a whole series of incidents where the Jewish people are sinning against God. And in the very beginning of chapter 11 in the book of Numbers, Bamidbar, it speaks of how the Jewish people are complaining. It is bad in the ears of God. God is angry. And fire goes out from before God and consumes the periphery of the camp. In that section, it is very clear that the fire is an expression of God's anger, of God's punishment in response to a sin. And hence, one could make the parallel and say, so too, in our situation, God is angry and is punishing Nadav and Avihu. And if we look at our section, and once again at the pshat, the simple meaning, what is wrong with what they did? They are now offering up to God incense, service of God. But if we examine chapter 10, verse 1, it says they are offering before God Esh Zara, a strange fire, Asher lo tziva otam, which he did not command them. This Esh Zara has echoes, perhaps, of the golden calf, the gold which was thrown into the fire, which then emerged as a calf. The act of making the calf, which was not something which God commanded, and hence becomes called Avodah Zarah, a strange, a foreign service. The sin of Nadav and Avihu is to now worship God in a way which God did not command them to do. Their sin is in sharp contrast to chapter 9 in our parsha, the beginning, where Aaron and they themselves bring a whole series of sacrifices which God commanded them to do through Moshe. In other podcasts, I spoke of the role of the Kohanim and mentioned that we have two parshiot which speak of the role of Kohanim, Parshat Titzaveh, Parshat Tzav, last week's parsha. Both parshiot speak of commandment. This is what characterizes the role of the Kohen, to be a servant who is commanded and does what God says. In the tabernacle, in the temple, there is no room for what we would call nowadays a creative service. If service of God expresses the relationship, the love relationship, then it is important for the Jewish people to put themselves in God's mindset. What would God like me to do? And then do that. We can certainly imagine many situations in our own lives, love relationships that we have, parents and children, spouses, siblings. When we do something for the other, is it what we would like to do or what they would like us to do? There can be many situations where we may do things for the other with good intent, but where we're way off the mark in terms of what they want or what they need. To have a successful, meaningful relationship, it is important to always be sensitive of what the other is interested in, and to not impose what I want on someone else. And that is true in terms of our relationship with God. Therefore, God commands us how to serve Him, and by doing so, gives us the means to be able to open the door to cultivate a relationship. The focus is on God rather than on me. There is another element here which is connected. at the end of chapter 9, when the fire comes down, the response of the people at that moment is to sing, to fall on their faces. There is a tremendous sense of unity among the Jewish people. And as I mentioned earlier, the feeling that the Jewish people, as a people, have now begun to live their love relationship with God. And all of a sudden, in the beginning of chapter 10, Nadav and Avihu go off and do their own thing. There's even a Midrashic comment which says, verse 1 begins, and the sons of Aaron took, in the plural, Nadav and Avihu, each one their censer. The Midrash says, they didn't even act as a pair, as a unit, but each one went off and did his own thing. But it happened that they each did the same as the other. At a moment when the focus should be on the community, they are caught up with their own experience. And even if we understand this, as the Netziv, for example, who says they became inspired, became ecstatic, and wanted to somehow express that inspiration by bringing an offering to God, but they should have somehow controlled that desire, that urge, to express their individual relationship with God, and somehow blend and join the communal experience of God, because this was the moment of the community. So that the sin of Nadav and Avihu was not just doing something which God had not commanded them, but in so doing, also cutting themselves off from the community, cutting themselves off from their role as those who are not only serving God, but serving the community. A double sin against God and the Jewish people. It is especially striking that the expression of their sin is the incense. The incense is at the core of the Yom Kippur temple service in chapter 16 in Vayikra. It is only with the incense, the service of the incense, that the Kohen Gadol, the high priest, is allowed to enter the Holy of Holies. The incense is a composite of 11 spices, which are seen to represent the Jewish people. When the Kohen brings the incense, he is meant to be reflecting the unity of the Jewish people. The incense is very interesting in that it is fire, which has the spices added to it, which in the end are supposed to produce a cloud. And this is reflected, articulated in Vayikra chapter 16, verse 13, in the Yom Kippur service. And he will take the incense and put it on the fire before God, and the cloud of the incense will cover up the covering of the ark, and he will not die. The fire becomes a cloud. It is very interesting that fire and cloud are two images that accompany the Jewish people throughout their travels in the desert. Two images of the presence of God. What is the symbolism of these two images? I would like to suggest the fire reflects the aspect of divine judgment. Already at Mount Sinai, we find God speaking to the Jewish people from the fire. The fire is the law, the standard which God holds us accountable to. When we don't live up to that standard, the fire lashes out against us. It consumes us. The significance in our parsha, after Aaron has brought all the sacrifices in chapter 9, and the fire comes down and consumes the sacrifices, it is a reflection of how God has now found him to have executed whatever needed to be done perfectly, to show that the Jewish people have actualized the demands and expectations made upon them. On Yom Kippur, the fire is meant to become a cloud. The cloud is symbolic of God's compassion, God's mercy. In rabbinic literature, there is much discussion of the clouds of glory. The clouds of glory that accompanied the Jewish people through their journeys in the desert, in the merit of Aaron. The clouds of glory that are supposed to protect them from all of the harsh elements in their environment. But the cloud is also the indication of how God exercises not only justice, but mercy. The role of the Kohen on Yom Kippur is to convert fire to cloud, to petition and appeal to God. Do not exercise absolute judgment. Exercise compassion. And what enables the Kohen to invoke that is by offering incense. Incense which highlights the unity of the Jewish people. That says with whatever faults we have, we are a united people. At least one day a year, that unity is reflected in this person, the Kohen Gadol, who does everything to exhibit the highest standard possible, and perhaps through that can impact, affect the character of the Jewish people so that they deserve to have another chance, another lease on life. When Nadav and Avihu offer the incense, it is a desecration of the incense. They are not representing anyone except themselves. They are taking something which should very much highlight their public role and are now using it to somehow promote their private relationship with God. Rather than having the fire turn to a cloud, the fire invites a response of fire that is devastating. Let me just add, if we examine the sin of the Jewish people in the golden calf, the purpose of the calf is not to serve God. The purpose of the calf is to gratify the people. In the construction of the calf, there is no real unity of purpose among the Jewish people. There are very, very serious divisions. There is a vast majority who are opposed to it, but are silent. There is a hardcore who are frolicking in self-worship, and the response is deadly. Aaron failed in the golden calf. He failed to somehow bring the people together. He failed in his attempts to direct them to serve God. He succeeded on the eighth day to correct that, but perhaps not enough in terms of his two sons. The eighth day is a bittersweet day for Aharon. On the very day that he reaches the peak of his role as the Kohen Gadol, where he is able, together with Moshe, to bring down the glory of God to dwell in the tabernacle, he perhaps has also failed in terms of two of his sons. They go on to bring a strange fire. They somehow have not internalized what it means to really be a Kohen, to be one who needs to serve. I'll just conclude by saying, in the aftermath of the Nadav and Avihu story, chapter 10, verse 10, there's a very interesting verse which says, U'lehavdil ben ha-kodesh u'ven ha-chol, uvein ha-tameh uvein ha-tahor. God commanded Aaron to know how to separate between holy and profane, between impure and pure. Offering incense can be the highest service of God. Offering incense can be tantamount to idolatry. There is a very, very fine line between the two. Context makes all the difference. So does motivation. But sometimes, even with the best motivation, one can still make a huge error. This is our challenge, to know how to be able to make those separations, those divisions, so that we truly become a kingdom of priests and a holy nation, as it says in chapter 19 of Shemot, at the revelation of Sinai. Shabbat Shalom.
Thank you, Rabbi Schwager. Your comments on the podcast are always appreciated. Please send your email to podcasts@pardesusa.org. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you on the next episode of Pardes from Jerusalem.